From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, it took almost 3 years, but it finally snowed here last week.
That's right. In fact, while I was back east for the holidays and what felt like an early spring, sprouting daffodils included, back here the snowfall was measured in feet and the overnight lows broke records.
So what's happening? Is this all part of the El Nino effect? Can we expect more snow and cold? Or is it just an old-fashioned winter? You know, something pre-21st century when snow was measured in feet, temperatures in single digits, and gas was under $2 per gallon.
Joining us to discuss at least two out of three of those memories will be Brian McInerney, senior hydrologist at the National Weather Service. He'll give us a rundown on last week's storm, as well as this past autumn's temperatures and precipitation.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll talk about a great documentary coming to Park City this weekend. It's called This Changes Everything, Capitalism Versus the Climate. It's based on a book by the same name by writer Naomi Klein.
Klein says that if we really want to solve such an existential threat as climate change, we need to rethink and restructure the very fundamentals of capitalism, economic growth, and personal consumption.
That's right. It's hosted by the Park City Film Series, and executive director Katie Wang joins us to discuss the film and the discussion panel that will be held immediately after its showing on Sunday night, January 6th.
Great.
January 3rd.
January 3rd.
Just like I wrote it.
Perfect.
And then changed my mind. All right. All that and maybe some news items on the growing bad air down in Salt Lake City. But
always
how that's
in the news.
Nothing compared to what continues to be bad air in Beijing.
That's right. If you want to feel better about the air you're breathing, we've got some good news.
Go.
You can join in on today's conversation by posting to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
This is Robin Marouche, director of the Kimball Arts Center, on behalf of Vail Resort's Epic Promise, proudly supporting KPCW. With a grant from Epic Promise, the Kimball Arts Center has provided over 7,500 students and almost 30 schools with free visual arts education. Thank you, Epic Promise, for giving our students an opportunity to learn about the arts and create their own masterpieces.
Rocky Mountain Power is proud to support KPCW and This Green Earth. Rocky Mountain Power offers watt-smart advice, such as cleaning or replacing your air filters regularly and setting your thermostat to 68 degrees in the winter. More ways to save energy at wattsmart.com.
We're back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on the environment, environmental issues, our relationships with the environment, our impacts upon the environment, and the consequences associated with not protecting and caring about the environment.
Can you make that list any longer, Chris?
What's the theme now? I'm Chris Cherniak, Nell Larson across the board, and joining us, our first guest, as he always does once every 3 months or so, to talk about weather and climate issues is Brian McInerney. He's senior hydrologist down with the National Weather Service down out of Salt Lake City. Brian, when is the National Weather Service going to have an office in Park City so you don't have to keep driving down there all the time?
Would that be great?
Oh, you know what? Say that again.
That would be good to
have an office down there to help here in Park City, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
We have a new weather station at least.
That's a climate station.
And what's the difference, real quick, between a climate and a weather? So we all.
So the weather is what you get every day. Climate station is long term. What are the trends going on in Park City with precipitation and temperature? And the ladies at the library measure the high and low every day and then measure the precip. So you get two readings and a precip reading every day, and then it goes into the long term record. And hopefully we can pair it with the long term record that was here previously at the Marsac building at the fire station, and then it went blank for many years. And so we're going to see how it comes out. We're kind of messing with the sensor. That's where I'm headed to after this to see if I can get the sensor working correctly. But we just installed it, and it's new, and it's great. And
they had their hands full measuring snowfall from last week.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. That was a nice, juicy storm.
It was great. It came just when we needed it, because when you look at snowpack, if you can go through November with low snowpack and still have a good shot at making average by the spring. But if you go through December with below average snowpack, your probability of reaching average snowpack in the spring is quite low. So we had 38 inches of snow, roughly. We gained 3 inches of water in an eight-day period. We had a 60% snowpack in Park City prior to the storm cycle. And when it was all said and done, we're up to 90%. And you would think it would be a lot higher because we just got nailed in 8 days. But we had a lot of ground to catch up to. But the skiing's really nice, and it's 90% of median. And that's a good thing right now. That's just what we needed. And I think the bigger picture to look at is the actual weather patterns. When we look at last year and we were at 40, 50% of normal at this time, what we need to really look at is we had a giant blocking high pressure that was deflecting all the weather really for the past 3 to 4 years. And this year the pattern's been very active. Even though we didn't really see much precipitation in November, it was quite active. We had low pressures coming down out of Alaska. They would move across the Pacific Northwest. And then what happened was we think it's because the ocean waters were so warm off of LA and Baja that the low would track down the coast and wouldn't come inland. And then finally it would track and it would break away from the mean pattern. And so we were getting split every week during November. We would see it coming. Mm. We would think it's going to be a really good thing. And then that low would track farther down the coast than it typically does and then come inland. Southern Utah did quite well. But northern Utah, we were about 50, 60% of normal snowpack through November.
So what's the difference? Why are we seeing more snow and precipitation this winter?
So it's most likely because we have a very strong El Nino. We have record-setting ocean sea surface temperatures in the equatorial Pacific in the ocean. And as a result, when you have that phenomenon going down in the equatorial Pacific, typically you get these westerly flows that are quite strong. The subtropical jet, which is somewhat like the Pineapple Express, becomes enhanced due to the warmer water. Because when you have warm water down in the equator in this gigantic region of the Pacific, you have all this energy, you have all these thunderstorms, you have rainfall that you didn't have before. So it changes the jet stream, and it enhances the jet stream coming out of the south. And so southern Utah, southwestern U.S., does much better during this. But when you look at what happened, we had storms coming out of the Pacific Northwest. But when you look at the totals for precipitation compared to last year, all of the West right now has snowpack that is above normal. Some areas that are 200% of normal due to this strong flow that's coming off of the westerlies. The only area that's probably below average snowpack is northern Wyoming right now. Every other place, Washington, Oregon, California, Utah, Colorado, we're all doing much better, above normal precip or right at where we want to be. And that's due to the equatorial Pacific being much warmer.
So how does this bode for our reservoirs and our water supply?
It bodes quite well if things keep going.
Yeah.
We don't see any sign of that big high pressure reforming. If you look at the climate of our winters, typically we get some type of a high pressure buildup over the west for a little bit of time, but it usually starts about now. And we're seeing that in a transitory way, but hopefully that's going to go away. And then the atmosphere is reloading, and we're going to get that southerly jet that's going to pick up, and we'll see a lot more snow. If we can keep normal, we'll do much better than what we have in the last 4 years. And right now, it looks very positive. We don't see that high pressure reforming. We're hoping that the dynamics of the atmosphere, the storms out in the Pacific really are just reloading, and we're going to see an enhanced weather about maybe the middle of next week. That's what we're looking at. It's kind of a wish right now because we had such a wonderful time with those 8 days, but if we can keep snowing, we'll be in great shape, and right now it looks like maybe that's the case.
And the temperatures have been pretty cold, too, below average the last six, ten days.
6, 10 days have been very cold. We even broke a nighttime low that was cold down in Salt Lake, which is rare because we break heat records all the time. But if you look, when we started the water year in October, we were about 5 to 7 degrees above down in Salt Lake, and our precipitation was only 50%. So it kind of had that look like, oh, boy, here we go again. But then November, December hit. Temperatures were bang on normal for the most part. But we had November's precip was only 50 or 60% of normal. But then we had December hit, and we've had precipitation upwards of 150% of normal during the month. And that really came in that 8-day storm cycle period, and that's been wonderful.
But okay, so there's only 2 days left in this year. What about, how does the water cycle look for the entire year for 2015? Well, we end the year, we're ending the year on a positive note, but
yeah,
is that going to make up for?
No.
No, okay.
It'll be another below average precipitation year for 2015 statewide.
So where are the reservoirs? Do you have any sense of how the reservoirs stand?
Yeah, the reservoirs are really not doing as bad as they could have, and that's due to a couple of things. First off, the farmers only receive 50% allocations for the most part. Some of the people who are on the lower end of water rights, they didn't get much of anything. But for the most part, when you look at the reservoirs that are in the Wasatch Back and the Uintas, 50% allotment, I've heard, was the key. And then we had significant rainfalls the last 3 summers that allowed people to use rainwater and not stored water. So reservoirs are not great, but they could have been a lot worse if we didn't get that rain and they maybe doled out the full allotment to the farmers.
That's interesting. Are farmers allowed to have their own ponds and such, store their own water on their property?
It gets messy, but yeah. No, you need water rights for certain lands.
You just can't build a pond.
Yeah.
Start stockpiling water.
Farming water.
Yeah,
actually,
exactly.
In Florida, they're like water farming activities that go on where they do stockpile water to account for the dry seasons and wet seasons, et
cetera. And people for a while had those barrels that were taking water off of the roofs, and the state said you really can't do that because it's not your water. I think they've eased up on that a great deal.
Mm-hmm. You can store some water in. There's a certain amount.
Sort of a residential scale, not like an agricultural scale of water. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we're speaking with Brian McInerney. He's senior hydrologist at the National Weather Service, and we're talking about we've just been talking about this past week's storm and what kind of impacts that's had on our snowpack. It said it was about 3 inches equivalent of water. So was that a pretty wet storm?
Yeah.
As water goes?
Yeah, for an 8-day period it is. It's a nice, good, healthy storm cycle. And I think we didn't have any of those for the past 4 years. We'd get maybe 8 inches, 10 inches. We had some last Christmas, but we didn't see it. So when you do see 3-inch storm with, approximately 38 inches of snow, you think this is terrific and this is something big, but it's really not the case.
And one interesting thing that snow does, too, is it provides a blanket, a thermal blanket, to the ground and to the plants and to the forests that need that. Because otherwise, if trees are exposed, if there's no snow, their roots are at risk to being exposed to extremely cold temperatures.
Sure, and it's also easier for them to actually dehydrate even in winter if they don't have a blanket of snow.
And that's what I'm saying with talking to a local arborist, that some spruces are undergoing that stress. They're dehydrating. And he said partly because last year there was so little snow that there was no thermal blanket for them to stay kind of quote-unquote warm, or their root systems to be warm. And they were at risk to not only dehydrating, but then just their roots were freezing too. And you can see that on some spruces around here where there's a brown tinge to their needles and such. So now more snow actually provides a beneficial element to local plants and vegetation. So it's all good.
Yeah.
And of course it's good for our economy, et cetera. Let's turn our attention to one thing you also talk about when you come on here. We look back at the past season and see how things unfolded. Let's talk about this past fall. How was it with respect to overall temperatures and precipitation? You kind of hinted at that earlier. How did we? Was it warmer than average? October, November?
Let's even go back even further. If you look back at last winter, we set heat records in bundles. There was all sorts of heat records. The hottest first 19 days of December. Then we had 48
2014.
Days of but it's a 2015 water year.
Oh, okay.
So if we look at that, but it's 2014 calendar year. We had the hottest first 19 days we've ever experienced down in Salt Lake City. We had 48 consecutive days of above average temperature. We've never seen that. Then we had the hottest February. Then we had the hottest March. And then we were below average precipitation. So it was a pretty grim year. Then we went into the summer, and we had some incredibly intense flash floods down in southern Utah. We had storms that really raged. Typically, we don't see flash flooding of the thunderstorm kind. Really, about mid-September, they kind of quit. And then we see major flooding on bigger scales. But thunderstorms, summertime thunderstorms kind of go away about mid-September. And we had really, really intense thunderstorms. And we had one in the town of Hilldale in Colorado City. And then Zion National Park, it was one thunderstorm complex, and it killed 21 people.
It's astounding.
Yeah. We've never had a loss of life like that from one thunderstorm complex ever in the history of our country since we've been here. Mm. And the rains were just phenomenal. And the flooding that killed the people, were if you saw the video, it was just horrific, the amount of water that was coming out of there. So we moved through with these thunderstorms, and then things got really quiet in October. The storms kind of quit. We were very warm for October. We had hardly any precipitation during that time. November got to be where it's typically what we see with temperatures, but still an absence of storminess, and that's because those lows were tracking down in southern Utah. The mountains down in southern Utah right now are good because they received the benefit of those lows tracking farther south. They have snowpacks that are 170 to 200% of normal right now.
Wow.
Whereas most of the area up in northern Utah and the Wasatch and the Uintas are about 100 to 120% as we speak. But then we got a direct hit in December with this last storm. And what it was just this straight shot that came out of the Pacific Northwest. And when you think of the jet stream, you think of the sine wave-looking event. This was a straight east-west shot that came out of the Pacific, and it went right over us, and it stayed there for 8 days. And produced all this snow that we've seen really across the western U.S. And it was terrific. And then that has gone away. We're somewhat in a messy pattern right now with the chance that we're going to see a high-pressure ridge build, hopefully for only a little bit, and then we'll see more storminess come out of the southwest and the west.
So let's take what we've been seeing here in Utah, in northern Utah, and set it in the context of what's happening in the U.S. as a whole, because we have had a really nutty holiday season.
Yeah.
So we're seeing cold temps here, lots of precipitation, and then in much of the eastern part of the country, record-breaking warmth. What's going on there?
So if we look back at last year, you see a sine wave going across the U.S. The high pressure would shunt the weather up into Alaska. It would come down into the Midwest, and then it would swoop back up into the East Coast. Boston had record snowfall last year. The eastern part of the U.S. was cold, it was wet, it was stormy, while the western part of the U.S. last year was dry and it was warm. Now, this year, we've got a jet stream that's coming across from the west, moving right through the west, and the East Coast and the eastern part of the Midwest, they're under high pressure. And they've got those temperatures you experience. 70 degrees on upper state New York on Christmas Day. People are playing golf and in shorts, and it's what you experienced. Yeah. But it's a total flip-flop of what we had last year based on where this jet stream is tracking.
Is that a function of the El Nino?
Yeah, for the most part, they think it is. And it's this giant weather event that occurred in the equator that's changing how it is. It's like throwing rocks in a river where the water goes. It's different this year than it was last year.
Okay. And now you were actually back east.
We can talk maybe
the numbers that you experienced.
Yeah, it was mind-blowingly warm.
Blooming?
There was no snow. The daffodils and the crocuses and stuff were starting to bud. The bulbs were starting to come up because of the warmth. We went sailing instead of skiing. And we were like, well, there's no snow. We'll throw on the wetsuits and rig up the boat.
It's called adaptation.
Yeah, that's right. It's my own personal climate adaptation.
It's how we have to adapt to a warming world.
But we broke the record. This was like Christmas Eve day. We broke the record for the highest high temp in the day, record for the highest low temp, record for the highest average temp, the highest the all-time highest temperature in December ever set in the area. So this is sort of north of Albany in that
area,
in the northeastern part of the state. A lot of areas are seeing their latest measurable snowfall, like they haven't gotten any yet at all because of the warm temperatures.
Has Albany? I think Albany finally got some snow. Literally last night or so.
Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of starting to come in now. But it just was, I mean, unprecedented, obviously. And then they're looking at, you know, sort of the average temps for the month are just going to be smashed by, like, you know, 8 degrees and 10 degrees, 12, 14
Absolutely.
Degrees. And there are these really neat maps that are out the sort of it shows how far from average the average daily temps were over the holidays, and it's like off the scale, you know. It's all
they
like
10
to 20 degrees.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah.
In fact, yeah. Brian, if you have a couple more minutes, I want at the bottom of the hour, I want to take a break. We'll talk a little bit about some of those numbers on a global level, and I want to share with you some of the numbers that the students at Park City High School's project they're working on suggests that the warming that's going on here in the Wasatch area. Can you hang around?
Yeah, sure. No
All
worries.
Right. It's This Green Earth. We'll be back right after these words from our underwriters.
Republic Services is proud to sponsor This Green Earth on KPCW. During the holiday season, Americans discard 25% more trash than normal. Roughly 80% of what is discarded during the holidays could be recycled, from gift boxes to wrapping paper and holiday cards. Recycling during the holiday season helps keep Summit County clean.
This is Tom Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We are committed to serving Park City and are proud supporters of KPCW. More information at bhhsutah.com or one of our 24 offices throughout Summit and Wasatch counties.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, right here on KPCW 91.9 FM in Park City. It's a weekly talk show on the environment, concepts of sustainability. Joining us is Brian McInerney. He's from the National Weather Service, senior hydrologist there, and we're talking things about all things weather and climate, and we wanted to spend... He's been gracious enough to spend an extra few minutes here chatting about some of the global... warming that we're seeing. And 2014, we know, was the warmest year on record. And then 2015 came along.
Yeah.
And it not only has beat 2014, it's going to probably shatter 2014's warmest year.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, the World Meteorological Organization, the WMO, back in mid-December, early December, already pronounced 2015 as the warmest year on record. That's how confident they were. They're usually very conservative, very careful,
very,
right? As good scientists.
Very
but with 2 weeks or so to go, they just said, you know what, forget it. 2015 is the warmest year on record. So let's talk about just how warm some of these months have been in 2015.
If we look at September, October, November that we just finished, the average temperature globally was 1.73 degrees Fahrenheit. Above the 20th century average. And it's the highest that it's ever been. That's the highest that's ever been recorded. We just had the hottest October ever recorded, land and sea together. Mm-hmm. And then we had November was the hottest November we've ever seen globally in land and sea.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the combination of that, the way that November's record was broken, usually you break it in tenths of degrees or hundreds of degrees. and this was broken by 1.04 degrees centigrade, which is 2 degrees Fahrenheit globally, for that month. And it's the first time any month has ever broken a record. It exceeded 1.0 degrees centigrade, and we just saw that last month globally. And we've been breaking records, and we get used to breaking heat records all the time, but now we're shattering these records by so much larger amounts than what we used to see in the past. And that was what we saw with November. Now we're probably enhanced this by the El Nino that we were experiencing right now. That's where that's coming from, because when you look at the combination of those two. But it's kind of shocking when you see the amount of heat that we're now recording in the atmosphere and in the sea based on what we used to see in the past.
How long is this El Nino expected to last? Is there a typical frequency to it?
Duration? It's actually in decline right now.
Oh.
And it's going to go back to neutral conditions most likely by the springtime.
Okay.
It's been building for quite some time, and it's here right at the right time for us for the winter. But it's fading, and it's going to go back to neutral conditions, like I said, probably about the springtime.
Okay. Well, let me bring this home a little bit, because I've been working with some students at Park City High School on PC CAPS and their project, which, Brian, you've been kind enough to help guide and mentor them on. Basically, just takes a look at the temperatures here in what they call the Wasatch area. And what they did was just take the data set from the Salt Lake City International Airport. It's the most robust and most reliable set of temperature recordings and precipitation recordings in the area. And they looked at the temperature trends starting back in the 50s, so about roughly six decades ago. Okay, so over the past six decades, this is in general some of the numbers they've come up with, that indeed warming is occurring, but it's not uniform over the entire year. There's some seasons that are warming more than others, and I'll get to the particulars in a minute. That the days and the nights are warming at a different rate. The nights seem to be warming at a greater rate than the days. Okay, specifically, our nights since the 50s and 60s have warmed by about 3 degrees on average. So nighttime lows are roughly 3 degrees warmer, but daytime highs, less than 1 degree warmer. So we always think that, wow, our days are getting, it's getting warmer out, it's hotter, isn't it hotter? Well, yes, but the nights are really kind of driving that overall warmth. Overall, since the 50s, this area has warmed by about 2.2 degrees. Is that a number that sounds about right?
Yeah.
And when you compare it on a global scale, though, since the 50s and 60s, that's two times the global warming over that same period of time. So we're warming, the West in general seems to be warming too at a faster rate than the globe on average. Does that sound about right?
Utah is warming, the farther south you go, 2 to 3 times the global average, like Blanding, they're about 3 times. The central eastern part of Utah is warming at about 3 times the global average. And then the farther north you go, it lessens. We're about 1 to 2 degrees or 1 to 2 times that of the global average.
Okay.
So the desert southwest, because it's a desert, is warming faster than the global average.
And one other thing that I thought was really interesting, given this non-uniform nature of warming, is they looked at the seasons. I don't want to steal too much of their thunder because they're giving a talk, presentation to Summit County Council next week. But just as a teaser, what's interesting is that, again, all seasons are warming. Falls have averaged about 3 degrees warmer. The springs are about 2.5 to 3 degrees warmer. It's the summers, again, that are really driving the overall warmth. 4 degrees warmer on average. Again, this is just looking at one data set, Salt Lake City International Airport, since the 50s and 60s. But the summers are on average 4 degrees warmer than they used to be six decades ago. The other interesting thing is the winter's not as warm as we thought. They're kind of bringing up the rear on the warming rate, only about 1 degree warmer. So the core months of winter, December, January, February, not warming as much as the core months of summer. Does that, is that,
Yeah.
What you're seeing too, or is that?
And it follows the science.
Elsewhere?
When you look at the published literature, it indicates that that's where we're headed to. Summers
okay.
will be much warmer, and that's where the deficit of precipitation, our water budget, will have the hardest time in the summer because it'll be so much hotter and there'll be so much more evaporative loss.
And that's what the consequences are.
Yeah.
So more evaporation, drier soils, which in return, if say you're a farmer, it's going to require more irrigation, more drawing of water, reservoirs go down. So it's all kind of cycles around, and our water budget, because net water budget goes down.
Yeah. The ladies did a fabulous job on this project.
Now,
they were very professional. They did a great job.
Yeah, and they're going to give a great talk about their findings next week at Summit County Council.
So if people want to go see that talk, Chris.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be so excited.
Yeah, you might get a big audience. Packed house.
Don't tell that to them.
Date and time.
to Jessica, Sienna, and Paige. Don't tell them. Hopefully they're out on the mountain right now, not listening. So anyway, that's what's going on the local level. We're warming, but we're warming at a faster rate than on a global scale. And remember, what's the goal? 2 degrees centigrade, which is roughly 3.8 degrees Fahrenheit. And look, our summers are already warmed 4 degrees Fahrenheit. So we've actually kind of passed the bar.
Yeah, the 2 degrees centigrade is what they consider the tipping point.
Tipping point.
The feedback loops will kick in earnestly and we'll have issues.
Okay. So, all right.
The biggest understatement of the day.
And that's the question, though. It's a good question. We run out of time, though, maybe for another time. It's like, how much has this warming already been baked into our global cake, per se? You know, we're at 400 parts per million on average, mm-hmm. carbon dioxide. And since we started our show seven years ago, it was only 394, 395. It goes up by 1 part per million every year, just consistently 1 part per million on average. We've crossed 400 parts per million. So how much is warming already baked into the cake? If we stop consuming fossil fuels, burning fossil fuels today, you know, warming is still going to be present. It's there.
Yeah,
the momentum
gases
is there.
Stay in the atmosphere for about 1,000 years. Okay. It's not like it's going to precipitate out. It's with us for quite a while.
All right. Dead air.
With that cheery news for the holiday season.
That's what we do here on this green earth. Nell, you know that. But Brian, thanks so much for taking the time to
You're
chat
welcome.
With us.
Thanks
always.
For the invite.
And we'll see you in March.
Okay.
That's right.
We do
your,
a summary
for your quarterly,
quarterly
seasonal
analysis.
Updates.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Brian okay. McInerney from the National Weather Service, senior hydrologist there down in Salt Lake City. Now he's heading over to the library to check on that
climate station.
See what's
not
going
a weather
on
station.
That.
All right.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
Thanks, Brian. Hey, let's take another break for some underwriters. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with hopefully Katie Wang from the Park City Film Series about the documentary coming
That's
to
right.
town this week.
This changes everything.
We'll be right back. It's This Green Earth.
Hi, I'm Margot Van Ness from Park City and proud supporter of KPCW. Park City offers events throughout the season, including the annual Torchlight Parade, New Year's Eve celebration, Spring Groove, and more. More information about all the events happening at Park City this winter at parkcitymountain.com.
Hi, I'm Seth Bockelt, founding principal of Bockelt Landscape Architecture and sponsor of This Green Earth on KPCW. With over 15 years in design and construction, we offer site planning and landscape design for mountain outdoor living spaces. Located at 750 Kearns Boulevard, 649-3856, or at bockholtlandscapearchitecture.com.
Back to This Green Earth, weekly talk show on environmental issues. I'm Chris Cherniak, Nell Larson across the board. Katie Wang joins us.
Good morning.
She's the executive director at Park City Film Series, and she's here to talk about a documentary coming to town this weekend.
Yep.
Called This Changes Everything.
Nice way to kick off the new year.
That's right. Got to start on the right foot.
We're going to change everything.
We're going to change everything. This is going to change everything. And starting January 1st.
That's right. It's based
is that part
on,
of your strategic plan?
That's right. Strategic plan, change everything. January 1st, 2016. It's, you know.
Done.
Check.
But we're going to change everything per Naomi Klein. She's the author of the book of the same name. So give us a little thumbnail sketch about what the film
is about. In the past, we've done, you know, a couple films on climate change. That's not kind of a new topic, certainly for this community. It's something that we know resonates and is something that people are interested in. But when I saw this film, it came through Toronto this year. You know, Naomi Klein has been in speaking engagements. She's, you know, her book's done incredibly well, bestseller. And because it the book and the film has a somewhat different concept. Instead of being gloom and doom, and she kind of starts out the film saying, you know, I'm really tired of hearing about drowning polar bears. Like, it's just not, like, it doesn't capture me anymore. Like, there's just too much of just dire, we're all going to die, mm-hmm. and we're going to go up in flames and get flooded and all this kind of stuff. There's got to be a different message. There's got to be a different way if we're going to find a solution for climate change. You know, what is that? And so what she does, and it parallels the book a little bit, but it's not a one-to-one. So if you're looking for just a recreation, you know, a books-to-movies type thing, it's not
right.
that.
Right.
It takes some of the key concepts from the book and then obviously makes them into the movie. But they did it over the course of a few years. They profiled 9 different communities around the world. Alberta tar sands, a community up in Montana. They go to Beijing, in various cities in China, as you were talking about earlier, just the incredible smog they've had there. India, so all these different communities, and what they're looking at is the kind of the climate disasters that are happening there, the environmental disasters with smog, tar sands, all of that, but then how the communities are responding and how they're having a positive effect because they're coming together and saying, you know what, this is not what we want our future to look like, and we need to take this opportunity to create this change and not wait for the government to do it and not, you know, wait for some miracle to happen or just get so depressed that we just do nothing and lay down and really be creative about the solutions. It's not anti-energy development, but it's rethinking, okay, what does it mean to be successful? What does economic growth look like? If we're growing at the expense of the environment and our health and, you know, people's well-being, because there's, the sacrificial zones is what she talks about a lot of where there's going to be a necessary sacrifice. We'll have to, you know, extract these natural resources. So the land is going to have to suffer. And that's just kind of how it is. Right. But then there's people that are part of that landscape. And that's often not part of the conversation. And really, is that the way we should be looking at nature? Is nature just a resource to be exploited, or is nature an ally? Can we work together and use the wind to create energy? Can we use the sun to create energy instead of damaging the environment and basically strip mining it to get oil out of it? Are there other ways we can do it while still creating jobs, while still having a reasonable quality of life? So it's really just an interesting conversation that she puts together of reframing, and that's, you know, that's the title, This Changes Everything, really reframing and creating a positive message about climate change. You know, is this an opportunity versus is this, you know, the worst possible thing that could be happening to us right now? So I think it's a very positive message and different from what I've seen with other climate change films. And I think what we need at this point in the conversation about carbon reduction and how do we move forward, and something that connects to our community, because we are having the same conversations in our own community with our net zero initiatives and all of that. And so
right.
that's, you know, the exciting piece for us is to bring all that together.
Yeah. I mean, in the book, she kind of outlines 3 fundamental concepts that have to change, 3 components of capitalism or our current economic models or government models. Sensible, doable, long-term planning for low-carbon mm-hmm. economies and low-carbon jobs. Okay, so like you say, we can transfer away from coal and natural gas and perhaps the oil infrastructure to more solar, wind, and other low-carbon alternatives and technologies.
And it's kind of like, you know, this in the business world, like a pivot, right? So it's like instead of drilling, using engineers to drill for oil, use them to build wind turbines,
mm-hmm.
right? They still have jobs. It's just doing it slightly differently.
Right. So another thing is tougher polluter pays regulations on businesses. So maybe a carbon tax of some sort for businesses and organizations to, again, incentivize low carbon alternatives. Higher taxes on the affluent. So she said, you know, that's one of the other components about capitalism, that our capitalistic and consumer over-consuming lifestyles have to change too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's part of the radical change that has to occur. More spending on public sector programs, again, infrastructures, improving highways, improving mass transit, improving our electrical grid and such.
Well, that's an interesting component that she brings in, I think, is the human justice component of it. That it is, there are these huge inequities, and you know, so much that happens in the world when you talk about economic development, it's under the auspices of, well, you know, we want the poorest of the poor to raise the level for them. It's like, well, we're exploiting the environment at their expense. How is this a better world for them? How are we improving their lives if they can't breathe the air because we have so much, you know, pollution from coal-fired plants?
Right.
If we are strip mining these native homelands, how is that improving the quality of life for native peoples and for all of us? I mean, there are these beautiful shots, and this is what's so great about film is you get to see the places that they're destroying and saying, oh, you know, we can just make that. We'll just, you know, reconstitute that later on. We'll restore it. And you're like, how can you possibly do it? It's like, it's right. never going to be the I same. You know, you see all the, it's imagine like Park City being like, you know what, we'll just rip everything down and in 25 years it'll totally go back to nature.
Sure.
Like,
that's the yeah. always the really? Tar It'll sands. The tar yeah. sands, the companies that extract tar sands up in Western Alberta say, well, we recover that land once we remove the tar sands. Well, perhaps you do, but it will never ever be the same because you've actually extracted 30, 40, 60, 80 feet of soil, of tar sands, and then you recover that and you create a completely different geography and such. And so, yes, you can't recover the way it was, you know, prior to the extraction. So that's the examples of that. And the same thing can be said for maybe deforesting areas. And of course, in the Amazon or so, we deforest and just change that
right.
from forest to farm, forest to pasture. There is no recovery there. It's just changing.
A one system. Directional change.
A one directional change.
Cycle back through.
No.
Yeah.
So okay. So but again, that's a function of our over consuming economy and over consuming nature, which Klein, I would posit, suggests that has to change. Mm-hmm. We need to rethink each one of us on an individual basis. How we consume fossil fuels in all the different ways, how we consume coal, oil, and natural gas on a daily basis, and what are we going to do about it as individuals, as families, as businesses, to consume less.
Right. And she it's interesting with hearing, you know, I haven't read the book, but what is...
But you've seen the movie.
But I've seen the movie a couple times. But what she highlights in the movie versus what's highlighted in the book. So she doesn't actually talk about as much in the movie about individual sacrifice, but she does talk about long-term thinking in terms of economic growth. So you have, you know, conversations with very poor people in India that are fishermen, and they're basically just barely surviving, right? So this is kind of the environmental justice component. And these big companies come in and say, hey, we're going to do a coal-fired plant. We're going to take this wetland over. And, you know, actually the energy from this coal plant is not going to go to your community. We're basically exploiting you, and we're going to sell it somewhere else. And these people who are, you know, probably have very little education, you know, but they understand how the world works. And this has happened enough that they said, you know what? They're offering us this one-time payment, but what about next year? What about when they've completely destroyed our environment and our livelihood, our means to make a living? What are we going to do then? It's not enough. You can't just say, oh, yeah, here's, you know, your $50 or whatever it is, you know, your one-time right. payment, and it's all good. It's like, no, it's not all good. It's okay for right now. But this is a long, like, we live here.
And right. And hope their children.
And this is a generational thing. This is not just you know, we're going to move somewhere else because it's so easy. There isn't this mobility, you know, nor do they want it to be. This is their homeland.
Okay. Go ahead.
So I was just going to ask on a slightly different note, when was this movie released and what caught your eye about it, you know, to make you want to show it here in Park City?
So it came out in the fall.
Okay.
It premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. And I'm always, you know, for me, I'm always interested in issues of sustainability. So I'm always looking for the next Chasing Ice, right? I mean, just something that will inspire you, but really create action. And that's, I think, the critical component. My background's actually in environmental behavior and communications. And so what's interesting to me to see with climate communications and how it's been a shift, it used to be this gloom and doom.
Yeah.
But it's, and this is kind of a, go with me with this analogy, but when I was learning how to play tennis a long time ago, I still remember my tennis coach saying, look where you want the ball to go. So if you look at the line where you want it to be, that's where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with climate change and all of these other, you know, environmental behaviors. If you imagine that the future is going to be this dire, grim, horrible place to live, that's what we're going to create because you can't imagine something different. But if you can imagine this hopeful future where communities are coming together and they are creating a different economy and a different, you know, measure for growth, then we can actually achieve that, right? And it's, you know, it's like, and you know, Gina Davis Institute talks about this with women in film, you know, you got to see it to be it, right?
Yeah.
So it's this idea of creating the positive messaging that, yes, there we have a lot of challenges that we're facing, but what are the positive messages? What are the positive imaginings for the future that we can all coalesce around and get excited about and not just be like, ugh, you know, it's the polar bears again, as Naomi Klein says, you know? So that's the stuff that I'm always looking for. So when I saw this film and I'd heard about her book, you know, I just was excited to bring it in.
Yeah, well, I think that's the kind of messaging we are starting to hear more and more of. And like even out of the, you know, the Paris conference, outside of the official conference of parties, there were these, you know, the meetings that the major cities were having. They were saying we don't need to wait for the federal government or global treaties. We have these population centers and we can act on our own and we can make a huge difference.
Right, right. Because that's what happened with Kyoto, right? Like, everyone was so disappointed that, oh, they didn't sign this and so that. It's like, well, what are we waiting for? Just do it, right?
Yeah,
you're going to spend your whole life waiting. And so, and there are exciting initiatives going on in our community. Something that I've been a part of, certainly with the Save Our Snow 2 initiatives, you know, the Park City Foundation, and now the next iteration. And on Sunday night, we're actually going to have a panel discussion after the film to talk about, okay, this film is all about local action. What are we doing? You know, let's put our money where our mouth is. And we are doing some exciting things. So we'll have Andy Bierman, who's a city council member, speaking about Park City's really ambitious net zero initiative and what that means and how can we be a part of that and support that, because it is going to take collective action. Bryn Carey, who's the CEO of Ski Butlers, who was in Paris and has been quite vocal on the climate front in our own community about getting the city, you know, pushing the city, saying we need to pay attention to this. Like, if we're going to do it, we need to do this now. And so hearing what he's doing as a corporate leader, but certainly within our community and globally on climate change. And then Dr. Jeff McCarthy from the University of Utah. He's the director of their humanities department, to talk about to link it all together. What are communities around the country doing and around the globe, and how do we connect to that? Germany is doing such exciting things with renewable energies. They're 30% renewable now. And it's communities that are coming together and voting, saying, we want to manage our own energy. We want to generate our own energy, and just taking the lead and saying, you know what, we're not going to wait. And we're just going to go forward and go with it. And so it's exciting to see kind of what's happening and how do we connect.
Give us the particulars.
So the film, This Changes Everything, is showing Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m., Sunday at 6 p.m. The 6 p.m. showing on Sunday will be followed by the panel discussion with Andy Bierman, Bryn Carey, and Dr. Jeff McCarthy, and Chris Cherniak, our host over here across the board, will be the moderator for the discussion. Asking the hard questions.
Asking the hard-hitting
questions. Taking questions from the audience.
And taking questions. And it's, you know, this is meant to be a conversation. So we wanted to have these experts to kind of set the playing field of saying, okay, here's what's happening on the big screen. Naomi Klein's vision, bring it down to our community level, and then, you know, bring it to the community, having this engaged conversation. So parkcityfilmseries.org, if you want to get tickets in advance or to watch the trailer, which is extremely powerful, I think. But yeah, we're really excited to start off the new year talking about important issues.
Well, here's it real quick. I was going to save this for a bit of a news item. We got a couple more minutes. I want to get your thoughts on this. The president's Clean Power Plan, right? The EPA and the president put forward this Clean Power Plan that, among other things, would require Utah to cut their carbon emissions by 37% by 2030. Okay, so getting off coal and natural gas and et cetera, but 37% cut. Now, op-ed in the Deseret News said that this is a bad idea, all right? And among other things, it would raise the average annual electric bill for a consumer by $400 a year, okay? So what's $400 a year? It's $1.20, $1.30 a day.
Whose estimate is that?
Well, the woman who wrote the op-ed cited a study from a conservative think tank, so this is going to be on the high end.
We saw that movie, Merchants of Doubt.
Hold on.
Exactly.
It's 400. If she's saying that this is $400 a year, your bill is going to go up $400 a year on average. That's $1.30 a day. Are you willing to pay $1.30 a day more for your electric bill to abide by the Clean Power Plan, to see less coal and natural gas? The answer is yeah.
Well, she's also assuming that you won't change your behavior. Incentive, if we're not using cheap energy, will people use less energy
All I'm asking you is, are you willing to pay $1.30 or more on your electric bill?
Sure. We have the cheapest energy.
Exactly.
You know, in the country.
And if that's the question, if that's the consequence, then I think a lot of people would say, you know what, I'll pay $1.30. And that's on average. For me and you and Nell, you know, it's probably less than a dollar. If you're one of those giant homes on the ridge line that lights up the night sky, like some squid boat working the South China Sea, you're probably pay maybe $2 a day.
Right.
But that's the kind of the change that has to be implemented. And that's the kind of perhaps the sacrifice that we need to consider, too. It comes at a little bit of a premium sometimes.
But I think what Naomi does talk about, and I think what's important to mention, is that, you know, there is a distinct equity, right? And that always comes up where people say, well, what about the people that can't afford it? And, you know, that I think needs to be addressed. But there also needs to be the behavioral component to it as well. So if people use energy, it's like when we were talking about St. George a couple weeks ago, right? It's like if water is so cheap, you waste it and you don't care because you have no measure, right? So if you have measures in place saying, okay, you know, energy is more expensive, you're not just going to leave your lights on and be like, eh, you know what, no big deal. If it starts costing you money, you're like, maybe I'm going to turn off my heat tape when it's not snowing.
Right.
Because that's really expensive. I mean, everyone who has heat tape.
Or less than 28 degrees when it doesn't
work. Goes up in the winter.
You're right.
And it's very much this short term versus long term like mindset.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, like the costs in the long term are going to be so much greater
exactly.
if you don't pay your extra dollar a day now.
So $1.30 a day investment
exactly.
in a cleaner future.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, healthier future.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. So we all get it. We're on the same page,
right.
But you're right. There's
was that good practice for your moderation on
that's right.
The
well,
first?
I'm going to bring that up. And these are the numbers run by conservative think tanks, so you know they're on the high end
right.
as far as the economic impacts go. And if that's the high end, then you know what? It's fine by me. I'm good with that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Katie, last word.
So just wanted to thank Treasure Mountain Inn. They're the underwriter for the weekend's film. They're also another business in town that has provided a lot of leadership around sustainability. And just, you know, to mention that we do have exciting things going on in our community. But, you know, there's always more that we can do. And I think coming together and having conversations like this, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to change the future and to really be a part of something that's exciting. So I encourage everyone to come on out this weekend. It's our regular ticket prices, $8 for general admission, $7 for students and seniors. Get a punch pass. It's even less expensive. But yeah, ParkCityFilmSeries.org. This changes everything. Get to hear from Chris.
Perfect.
Sunday night. No,
you can't get enough of the
screener. No extra charge to have Chris moderate the conversation.
We'll see if that draws anybody. But thanks again, Katie, for coming on.
Thank you.
As always. And we'll see you Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's right.
All right. We got one more quick break and we come back. Got to wrap up. It's This Green Earth.
Support for KPCW comes from the Park City Film Studios and Crandall Capital. Now open for business, the studio offers 3 sound stages, 45,000 square feet of meeting and event space, and dedicated truck and trailer parking, each with its own individual power hookups. Site plan, stage layout, and more at ParkCityFilmStudios.com.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-Law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Time to wrap things up real quick. Let's thank our sponsors and underwriters who make this show possible. They include
Recycle Utah,
Rocky Mountain Power,
Vail Resorts,
Public Services,
Bockholt Landscape Architects,
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties,
and finally, San Francisco Design.
As always, you can join us and like us on Facebook. You can unlike us too, can't you?
I guess it works both ways.
It's democracy.
You can also email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
All right. This is KPCW 91.9 FM Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Thanks again. NPR News is right now.